Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation. Heard every Saturday at 4:20 p.m. online at americascannabisconversation.com. Each week, we provide our listeners information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and adult-use cannabis industry. You'll hear from industry experts, elected officials, local growers, detractors, and more. Learn how to build your own cannabis business, how to grow the product, what's legal, and where it's legal. Tune in each week to hear the latest industry news and updates from the American Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, tips on investing in cannabis, personal success stories, and more. It's time to join the conversation. And here's your host, Dan Perkins.
This is Dan Perkins with your America's Cannabis Conversation. Quick news. Illinois' long lines, high demand causes Illinois adult-use marijuana stores to ration flower, requiring customer appointments. A few weeks into the recreational cannabis sales in Illinois, the supply of flower remains tight, which is forcing many marijuana retailers to limit the amount of sold to any one customer. That's to ensure retailers can serve as many people as possible, and some shops are even requiring adult-use cannabis customers to schedule an appointment. Illinois cannabis retailers are required to designate all inventory as either for medical marijuana or recreational customers upon receiving it, and they must also have at least 30-day supply on hand at all times for medical marijuana patients. Some of the tactics marijuana retailers in the state are taking to address the issue include 1. Designated Mondays for medical patients only, 2. Implementing a reservation system for recreational customers, and 3. Curbing the amount of flower customers can purchase at one time. Los Angeles, California. California finds illegal cannabis vapes tainted with additives. Marijuana vape cartridges seized in unlicensed stores in Los Angeles contain potentially dangerous additives, including a thickening agent blamed for the national outbreak of deadly lung illnesses tied to vape. Officials also found that illegal vape confiscated in December raids typically were not as potent as advertised and sometimes contained just a fraction of the THC claimed on the labels, according to the tests run by the state of California. Toronto, Canada. And in our final story, a cannabis-focused mutual fund and ETF to close. The Evolve Funds Group, a Canadian fund manager with more than $630 million Canadian under management, on Tuesday said it will shutter its small, poorly performing cannabis mutual fund and an even smaller exchange-traded fund, ETF, that also invests solely in marijuana companies. Evolve attributed the closing to the volatile nature of the marijuana space. On or about March 30th, the Toronto Stock Exchange will close the Evolve Marijuana Fund, which trades as SEED on the Toronto Stock Exchange, as well as the Evolve U.S. Marijuana ETF, which trades as USMJ on the NEO Exchange. SEED was launched on February 12, 2018 and only had $4.25 million in management, and USMJ, launched in April of 2019, has a mere $1.7 million in assets under management. SEED lost 34% last year compared to a 31% drop in the North American Marijuana Index, which trades major cannabis stocks in the U.S. and Canada. This has been your American Cannabis Conversation Quick News. I'm Dan Perkins. Let's see who's joining the conversation today. First, we have Anthony Planis, who's going to talk about the services that are available to you as individual investors interested in the cannabis space, from Banyan Hill. Also joining us today is Alex Carrion, who is the Senior Solutions Manager for Lightspeed Technologies. He's going to talk about the utilization of point-of-sale software for your dispensary. Next, Justin Costello, who's going to talk to us about a revolutionary new delivery service to deliver cannabis product to dispensaries and to other manufacturers. Drones. Yes, drones. And finally, our serial entrepreneur, Ellis Smith, is going to talk to us about the next run on the ladder, building and operating a dispensary profitably. This is Dan Perkins. Let's join the conversation. Welcome back to the conversation. And we're talking today with Anthony Planus, one of our core presenters, and tells us what's going on from an investment standpoint. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
What we decided to do is that Anthony's been on numerous times, and we've never really given him an opportunity to talk about what his company does in the cannabis space for investors. So we're going to spend this block of time talking to Anthony about his company, their products and services, and how they can help us as investors in the cannabis space. So tell us about your company.
Yeah, great. So I work for a company called Banyan Hill Publishing. And really what we do is we provide actionable investment information. And so we're not financial advisors. We aren't analysts in the sense of like SEC regulated or, you know, an analyst you might see from like Goldman Sachs or something like that. Really what we do is we do our own 100% independent research on these companies, on sectors. And really every analyst, every editor, you know, has his or her field of expertise. And so I contribute to a couple of those different letters about the cannabis sector. And so really what we do is we dive into the numbers, we look at what's going on, and then we provide basically our top picks. So the world is awash in information, and you'll see the media, you know, just reporting numbers and things like that. And there's really no actionable advice with any of that. And so really what we try and do is build a model portfolio of the picks, when we would buy them, what price we would buy them up to, and then we track that performance. And so investors, readers can follow along with what we do, and they can kind of look over our shoulder and see the actions that we would take, and then they can choose to take those same actions in their portfolio if they'd like to.
You know, Anthony, I've been in managing money for almost 50 years and in private practice, and I've always found when I brought on a new client, they are surprised when I tell them that everything we buy has to have an exit review point. So they mm-hmm. would say to me, I mean, you're going to tell us when I should sell something, or you're going to sell it for us? I said, yes. That a lot of people are easy to tell them what to buy, but very reluctant, if ever, tell them when to sell it. And you're providing information. And there was an interesting story about information that I thought might be of interest to our listeners. And that is, I don't want to name companies or stocks, but let's say that there was a research company who was basically a short company. And for our listeners, that means that they are looking for opportunities that are going to go down in value, not up in value. And so they short them, hoping to be able to sell them sometime later at a profit on the decline. And this particular company went after a very major company, did some real damage on a research report. They didn't have, they weren't credible in the details. They didn't even know how to spell the names of the company officers correctly. They said they were able to use drone flyovers that were able to pick up the contaminants and the pollutants in the soil inside the growing houses. And so it was really, for a professional like you or me, it would have been very questionable, but a lot of people bought it. And so a lot of misinformation about cannabis, mostly on the short side, but there are some people on the long side. So how do you develop your information?
That's a great question. And you're 100% right that there is a ton of misinformation. You're right that the short reports that come out are often very misleading. And we can just look at one of those. And like you said, there's once you're in this industry, you can tell immediately when one of these reports should be taken seriously because it's credible, and when it's just a piece of garbage and it's not worth the paper that it's printed on. And the same thing, the other direction, we see pump and dump, kind of situations go on all the time. And usually our first sign of a pump and dump going on is when a bunch of readers start writing in asking questions about a certain company because we realize that those marketing efforts are going on. And so then we go and we look for what the that marketing campaign is. We look at the people behind it, and we can pretty easily discredit them just based on that. And so, but to the question about how we find our information, you know, we only look at credible sources of information. And so we're looking at the quarterly and the annual reports. One of the things that's really interesting about the cannabis sector is that it's so new that most people don't really know how to interpret, you know, the results. It's not like there's a standardized, you know, this is the way we look at this. This is what we look at, you know, in terms of evaluating the business. Kind of everybody, you know, all these companies start reporting and they use a little bit different figures and different numbers for some of these values because there's no real set standards. And then the analysts don't have really a set standard for evaluating them across the board. And so because of that, there's really room for this information and knowledge edge to come into play so that you really have to understand what the most important factors are. And then you focus on those and only those. And so we actually have a lot of experience from the mining sector where there's a lot of companies that are borderline fraudulent. And so what we noticed was that there was a lot of you know, people from the mining sector that had been running fraudulent enterprises or borderline fraudulent enterprises that moved into the cannabis space. And so we could eliminate a company just based on who its top people were. So you do that, you eliminate a lot of the names, basically all the bad names right off the bat. It's super easy. And then we go into the names that look legitimate, and then we look at the numbers and we really look at what kind of staying power they have. And so that's our general approach to it. We've also done on-site visits a couple times. So we've visited sites, and one of them has been one of our top recommendations for quite a long time. And then another one that we visited, you know, it looked great on paper. Everything that they were putting out looked fantastic. And then we got to the site and we talked to management, and we realized that there was a big division. You know, the greenhouse and production aspect was very strong, but the marketing side, the branding side was very weak. And so we knew that that was a company to stay away from, because while it looked great on paper, really their strategy wasn't going to be able to compete alongside others. And so we stepped away from that. And so on-site visits can also be a fantastic way to find out whether there's really something behind this company or not.
We're speaking with Anthony Planis from Banyan Hill Publishing. Let me ask you a question, Anthony. Right now, in your some of your various services, how many stocks are in a recommended position?
So within our main letter, Real Wealth Strategist, I can't remember exactly. We probably have just about 20 active positions through that entire one. And we are actually adding cannabis stocks right now. So we're finishing up an updated report. And so we're going to add a few names in the cannabis sector because basically what happened was with this drawdown, like you said, as far as exit strategies, you always have to have an exit strategy. And so a lot of these companies on the way down, we locked in profits. And so we didn't ride them all the way down. And so, you know, other people, they were up, you know, 60, 70, even 100%+ sometimes, and now they're down in a position, and we don't do that. So we close out these positions to lock in a gain, and then we've waited for things to settle. And so right now we are getting ready to add back in names. Some are new names, some are names that we've previously recommended and made money on, and so we're getting ready for things to kind of start to charge higher again.
When you say you're adding new cannabis positions, are you thinking that maybe the bottom, the horrendous bottom bottoming process we went through last year is pretty much over and there are opportunities to buy?
Yeah. So, you know, for really what happened was we saw a big breakdown in the sector as far as the companies that just don't have the sustaining power and the ones that do. And so what you're going to see is that the ETFs and the indices that track these may not show a bottom, because there's going to be a lot of names that still have further to fall. But there are names that are turning the corner and have potential here. And so that's why we aren't huge fans of the ETFs that are out there, because they hold names that we don't like along with the names that we do like. And so we don't believe in buying those low quality names. So we're just looking at high quality names where the risk is, you know, it's not in the balance sheet. It's really in things that you can't forecast, like when there was the vaping crisis. You know, that was a temporary risk and disruption in the market that you just can't forecast. But it wasn't an issue with the balance sheet. But that event tanked some of these companies that had poor balance sheets, because their stock fell, and that was the only way they could actually make money, was by selling their stock. And so if their stock was worthless, they can't make money, and they basically file for bankruptcy. And so those are names that you want to avoid, you know, and those are really the ones that drug the sector down the most, was when you have like an 80-90% loss on a name like that.
Would it be fair in the last moment, would it be fair to position your company as a long-term holders, or are you traders?
You know, it depends on the service, actually. We have some services that are very long-term buy and hold, and then we have some services that are more geared towards trading or for speculating. And so we kind of have a mixed bag for everything. And so, you know, we have the free daily letters that if you go to our website, you can sign up for those, and you can kind of get a taste for what every editor provides. And you can really find the best match for what your own personal investing style is.
So let's take that opportunity for you to tell people how they can get a hold of your company and find your various products and services.
Yeah. So if you go to BanyanHill.com, you can sign up to our free letter, and that's the best way to start getting content, actionable ideas immediately. And then for more of my content in video format, you can go to YouTube and just Google my name, Anthony Planis, and I do a weekly marijuana market update where I talk about some of the biggest news pieces, and I also cover names and basically do a rundown of what I think about their balance sheet and their strategy and really where I see them as a good buy or something to stay away from. And so I've done a few videos on that, and I've got a little bit of a track record going as far as picking winners and losers.
Good. We've been on the conversation today with Anthony Planis from Banyan Hill Publishers. And Anthony, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And if you missed any of this great interview with Anthony, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com archive section, and you can hear all of this show and a bunch of other shows that Anthony's been on. So thanks for joining us at the conversation. We'll be right back.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network.
This is Dan Perkins, host of America's Cannabis Conversation, and I want to hear from you. Send me an email. Tell me what you like about our show, what you don't like about our show, what kind of guests you'd like to hear from, and are there subjects that are important to you that we're not discussing? Let us know. Go to W420RadioNetwork.com and send us an email. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to The Conversation. This is Dan Perkins, and joining us today in The Conversation is Justin Costello, who is the president and founder of GRN Holdings and GRN Funds. Picked Justin because of two reasons. One, he is one of those young entrepreneurs who are risk takers who are changing the industry. And number two, he's got a new technology for delivery that's going to cut costs by 90%. Justin is a self-proclaimed cowboy in the cannabis industry, and we'll explore that later. So, Justin, welcome to the conversation.
Great. Thanks, Dan. Good to be here.
Justin, as I said earlier, one of the reasons I wanted you on the program is you are a successful young person, an entrepreneur, and we are trying to help people who are thinking seriously about getting in the cannabis business, what it means to get in the business, and the risks and rewards. And talking to somebody who's been successful like yourself is very important. So tell us a little bit about how you got into the business and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. I guess my background or CV is I started, like a lot of people do, out of school in corporate America. I worked for a Fortune 500 company. I had some money invested in a friend of mine's business, which was out in Spokane, Washington, that did medical cannabis. He was going through some family things, gave me a call, and basically said, you know, he'd like me to just take it over if possible. And at that time, I was kind of in between, jobs at the moment, and came out here to kind of just go ahead and sell the business, and, you know, found out very quickly that the way that the medical industry was designed and built was there were co-ops. So they're really like a medical co-op. So you can't really sell that because it's based upon a medical issue from the Department of Health. So I really ran the business. I started, you know, we had one facility, and then I expanded it to about a dozen total. And we became one of the larger medical guys in the state. And then when said it was going to pass, I took a look at the licensing structure and really kind of, you know, took a step back and analyzed what it is I thought my strong suits are and what I wanted to do. The industry really needed a deal maker. It needed a financier to kind of, you know, figure things out. And so I didn't go into the license end of it. I started an investment bank, is kind of what it's designed as, where Schedule is kind of a private equity venture capital company. We really didn't have the ability to go public or anything like that in those days. There wasn't an option. So I went that route and started, you know, really deal making and, you know, put together 5 deals and put together 10 deals and put together 20 deals and got bigger and bigger. And then, you know, last year, a friend of mine came to me and said, you know, you should really consider all these businesses you've built and grown and developed, and, you know, you should consider the public markets. And, you know, I had a lot of experience back in the day, mostly on the NASDAQ and NYSE, but, you know, he said you should really consider it. So we took the company, we bought a shell. We're in the process of entering in entities into that shell right now, which takes some time. But we started doing that, and then, you know, the market got very excited. I think it needed a good story and a winner. And so our market cap shot up to $2 a share, which was about $500 million. And now we're trading around, 150 to 200 million right now is our market cap. So, that's kind of my story in, you know, 5 minutes. Come from the Midwest, nice parents, you know, good Catholic parents, really worked pretty hard and didn't have much when I started, and, you know, kind of built something, very happy. A lot of great team around me. Nobody can do it themselves. You know, I have a really great team of operations people, finance people, marketing people, and administrative.
Thank you for that. You know, over my short time in this business, I've had an opportunity to interview probably 75 to 80 people like yourself. And the commonality amongst all of you is this will to succeed and then deliver on that success. So you've done a terrific job, and I appreciate you sharing this with me and with the audience. I do have a question, not intended to embarrass you, but just a curiosity. Were you a consumer of the product before you got into the business?
Yeah, I was. I mostly on the low dosage THC and CBD side of it, mm-hmm. So more like the full spectrum. More on the indica side of things. I didn't like the heavy psychoactive, you know, strains, but, it doesn't work for everybody. You know, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, medication's different for different people. You know, I can take, ibuprofen, but Tylenol hurts my stomach. You know, I mean, it's everyone's different and everyone deals with it differently. I think for a lot of people, cannabis is an excellent, source of, you know, things like pain relief, anxiety, diabetes, you know, people who have, you know, a lot of ailments that are, you know, really, you know, taking a lot of pharmaceuticals every day. I'm not a doctor, but I can definitely say I've seen, at least in the medical days as well, I can see people's lives get better, right? I mean, if it's pain management or anxiety or having an issue with,
arthritis. I mean, personally, I've seen people get better. And so, yeah. I believe in the product. I think it's not for everybody. It's certainly, not for people who abuse it, but in from a recreational standpoint, I think that's where there's some policy stuff going on in the States right now that, that's where it's at. It's like right in the precipice or the cusp of, you know, what people want.
We're speaking with Justin Costello, chairman from GRN Funds and GRN Holding. And, you know, Justin, I understand what you're saying, and I agree. There's lots of people that have been helped by cannabis and for that matter, CBD. A lot of the research that's coming out is showing that about 40% of the people who are taking cannabis are doing it for pain purposes, and about 20% are taking it for sleep problems. So these are two real strong issues that the cannabis product can help people with. You're absolutely correct. Cannabis is not for everybody, just like Tylenol, as you said, isn't for everybody. But what bothers me is some of the unscrupulous people in the industry who are making outlandish claims of cure cancer, cure dementia, when it's not in fact true. It really bothers me about these false claims. And recently I had the chief litigation attorney of the Federal Trade Commission, who's working with the FDA and trying to crack down on these outlandish marketing promises. So let's move on. Do you own dispensaries or operate dispensaries?
We're primarily in the ancillary side of the business. We do have interest in several CBD manufacturing processing companies, as well as a few interest in cannabis production and companies. In Washington here, the way that the licensing was done was it's not vertically integrated. And so what that is you kind of have to choose which area you want to focus in. And really people know us as being the banking services, financial processing services, payroll HR services. So we've kind of carved out a little bit of a niche in the professional service side for the industry that really was not very apparent. And you know, we just saw kind of an opening. You know, a lot of the people were focused on, oh, I want to be a retailer. And I'm like, well, you know, back in the gold days, you know, the miners, you know, not a lot of them succeeded, but the guys who sold the services, the picks and shovels, you know, that kind of old school, you know, explanation everyone uses, you know, to talk about a new industry is that, and it's really true, you know, you maybe make less margin out the gate, but you don't deal with the politics, and you're also, you know, building a customer base as you go.
With the 60% correction in the cannabis stocks last year, what do you think are the prospects going forward in 2020 and beyond?
I think it's going to springboard. I think that there were obviously some of the tickers were over-purchased. I think they were overhyped. Also, I think if you look at public plays, fundamentals is really what separates a good stock from a bad stock. And, you know, also, you know, the industry's new, right? It's figuring itself out. It's they're starting to get the good, talented people in the C-suite areas where, you know, some of the people said, well, if I go in a cannabis company, I can't go work for a normal company ever again. So I think that mentality is changing with executives. And so you had a lot of things like turnover. You had a lot of things that deadlines, you know, production deadlines, project deadlines, you know, I think it's going to springboard. It's becoming a more mature industry. It's being respected as an industry. I mean, just here in Washington, we're a multi-billion dollar industry. So, you know, people don't cough their nose here. The public markets, you know, the metrics, if you look at, you know, metrics, you know, 10 to 1 on revenue, 20 to 1 on revenue, you know, in some cases you saw these companies trading at 100 to 1 on revenue, you know. So I think the fundamentals are gonna figure themselves out.
Justin, we have about a minute left. I wanted to ask you one more question. What do you think are the biggest challenges facing the industry going forward?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is policy. We've seen a lot of policy come recently too with the new administration. Where, you know, where do they stand on it? You know, I think that, you know, the administration's come out and said, you know, they're not supportive of medical. They don't come out and say we're supportive of medical cannabis, but they're not very supportive of recreational cannabis. You know, adult use or non-medical use, or I think that's a big thing. Also, you know, the 10th Amendment, you know, the state versus, you know, federal, that's something always too, because these states are essentially making a product legal, right? So they're voting in, you know, legalization, but we still have analog laws, you know, drug enforcement laws that are make it federally illegal. So, you know, it's still considered like a class one narcotic. I mean, which is bizarre to me, but, you know, then you have a state that makes it legal. So, you know, and enforcement has dropped off, and you don't hear about, you know, them busting up farms and stuff like that as much. But, I think at the end of the day, you know, legalization, it does curb the black market, which is a good thing. And, that I think that at the end of the day, that's something that's driving policy as well.
We've been talking to Justin Costello, the chairman of GRN Holdings and Funds. I want to give you a little bit of a sneak preview. He's going to be on very soon talking about a new technology that's going to revolutionize the distribution of cannabis, either to B2B or B2C, and I'm looking forward to it. But in the meantime, Justin, tell our audience how they can get in touch with you.
You can follow us on Twitter at @InkGRN, or you can check out our websites, www.grnfunds.com or grnholding.com as well. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
If you didn't hear all of the interview with Justin, you can go to w420radionetwork.com, and you can download the balance of this show or any other show that's been aired by simply clicking on the archive button. This is Dan Perkins, and thank you for joining me in the conversation today.
America's newest and fastest-growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
This is Dan Perkins, and we're about halfway through today's conversation. I hope you have found the people interesting and helpful. In case you didn't hear all of the interviews in today's conversation, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com to listen to this show. If you missed any of our previous shows, or you want to hear a particular show again, you can go to the archives and download a missed show anytime that's convenient for you. Our goal is to bring a high-quality program that is both entertaining and informative. For those of you who are in the industry, we hope we can continue to be your voice, telling the people of America the benefits of this amazing all-natural product. We have been surprised at the willingness of important people to come into this new program and talk about the challenges and opportunities in the cannabis industry. It's hard to believe that it's been 23 years since cannabis was made legal in California. I think the next 23 years might be even more exciting than the first 23. One more thing before we get back to the conversation. Should you have a question or a comment, please contact us at contact@W420RadioNetwork.com. That's contact@W420RadioNetwork.com. And now, back to the conversation.
Welcome to the conversation. Joining us today is our serial cannabis entrepreneur, Ella Smith, who's going to talk to us about another rung on the ladder of businesses that you can get into and the cannabis returns and cost. Today we're going to talk about delivery, meaning delivery on a B2B basis or B to consumer. So joining us today is Ella Smith. Welcome to the conversation.
Thanks for having me on.
If we're talking about B2B deliveries, are we talking about delivering from a manufacturer to a distributor or one warehouse to the other? What are we talking about?
That's correct. So that would be one avenue, or it could be going from, from any of the edibles manufacturers to the flower producers. You'd be picking up that material and then bringing that to the dispensaries for the final sale. That would no, so that would fall under the transport from the B2B side, where you would just be, you know, you would be sending material to these extractors. You have to manifest that material to an extractor. They could produce that in the oil, and then that product could be picked up then again by a transport service, then taken to a retail outlet for distribution.
So let's start with B2B. If I wanted to get into the B2B business, what do I need to know? And by the way, what's the best business opportunity in B2B?
So there's limited states across the U.S. That have this type of license in place. A lot of states don't require it, and some are now kind of putting this in place, Nevada being some, Massachusetts being some, Illinois right now is offering this. And so as we look at kind of our barrier for entries to get into the cannabis sector out of all the four different business models, we look at this one as a transportation kind of being that bottom rung of this ladder, being that first level, we'll call it the easiest, cheapest way to get into spaces to do this type of business. And so you will need to make sure that where you locate your business, you will have to have an actual physical location. You're going to have some type of van or some type of car that is going to be qualified to meet whatever rules and regulations that the state has set for you. And so you have to understand those capacities. You may have to be zoned in a specific area. That'll be fine to do. And then for the most part, it's really just ensuring that you are following the rules and regulations with the type of vehicle that is required. It's got the proper storage container inside the vehicle. Most of these things will also have a GPS tracker, meaning before you go pick up material, you will have to provide a manifest to the state of exactly your route plan, where you're going to be going, who you're picking it up from, who's it delivered to. And these folks will have to sign off on all of those components. So it's a very, strict process you have to follow, but it's very replicatable and very easy to follow.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate and ask you a question. I want to ask you a question about this because there are very high holdup rates for dispensaries. And I'm wondering how secure and how safe are the delivery services, and what's the holdup rate?
We do see from a dispensary standpoint, there has been quite a bit of robberies and these things happening. But from the delivery standpoint, I don't have the data on this, but my understanding is we have such good checks and balances in place that this diversion of loss component should be very minimal, if any, due to the nature of the business. And what happens in our industry now, if you do get caught, you're in the middle of theft of this and they catch you, you will get you will go to prison. They will they'll take you to court, they will put you in jail, you're handling a controlled substance in their eyes. So the repercussions are pretty strict these days, and people are pretty good to follow the rules and regs so that they don't fall into that category.
I have written several stories on the robbery rate in dispensaries, and it's quite high. It's second only to liquor stores. And the last number I saw in the last 12 months, 1 in 5 dispensaries will be held up. I have a friend up in Northern California who owns 9 dispensaries, and in 1 week, 3 of them were hit for hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash and merchandise. It's a huge loss because it can't be insured, and they take your cash, they take your product. In some cases, my friend up in Sacramento said they even took the safes at one store. So to protect yourself, you need a truck and some other things.
Yep. So they usually a van with no windows. They're going to require a specific holding, we'll call it container to hold all the material in. It's going to have a specific lock on it. There will be a GPS on that truck. Some states do require someone to ride shotgun in the front seat with you and be armed. And so it just all depends on the state requirements and what they're looking for. Some are just one driver doing the delivery.
So the restrictions you were talking about were from B2B. Are they also B to retail?
Let's look at it like this. So that's kind of the one model where you're taking the wholesale product to the retail they're going to distribute. So the other model is where now the retail operators can actually have a distribution business taking the product into the community door to door. And that's where you're seeing this in California. They just started this in Colorado for the medical patients having door-to-door, which is new for us. And so this is a big shift and change, and it's a great opportunity as well. They seem to be very successful in the past in many different markets before they get regulated. We used to do delivery in Colorado back in 2007, 2008, 2009. And so there was ways to do it back then before regulation. now regulation comes, they've got stricter plans, and yes, there's a lot more diversion of loss in that component.
I live in Southwest Florida, where there's a huge medical marijuana marketplace, and currently we don't have delivery services, but I would think it would be a great opportunity if the state would ever allow that to happen. I always thought that a delivery service would do extremely well and be very profitable in Florida on the medical side. But, you know, when you think about it, I think about a delivery service. Are you really a dispensary, or do you pick up drugs at some other dispensary and deliver them to the customer?
You have a retail license, but there's a delivery component to that license that you're allowed to have, because you're going to be paying out those retail taxes just like a regular retail business.
So, Ellis, do you actually carry inventory, or do you go to a dispensary to get product?
Nope, you will be your own inventory holder. So you will be the one that will be distributing it. You'll have you will have a retail store that you can support. Now, not everybody with these types of licenses have a retail store, and they will just have a off-site location that will have their inventory stored and use that as a distribution point.
We are speaking with Ellis Smith, who is the chairman and other titles of American Cannabis Company. In a B2B model, you are delivering product from a manufacturer to a dispensary or to another manufacturer who's further processing the product. Is that right?
Right.
Or even your own, for that matter. You could be growing your own, and you have that license to go and be that transporter for yourself as well as being it for third parties. So, yes, that's correct.
So if I'm a transporter B2B, what kind of money can I make?
You know, there is anywhere from $1 million to $5 to $10 million and up, depending on the volume and scale you can tap into on these types of businesses. And it really boils down to the margin. This is what everybody wants to hear. How much can I walk away with? Gross is one thing. What can I net? What can I put in my pocket? And most cannabis businesses should be operating anywhere from a 25 to 40% margin. That is very consistent on the operators that know how to run business models. Now, there's a lot of folks that are obviously in a red number and don't know what they're doing. So it's very important that you follow and understand how to run that business.
If you have a delivery service and you're own a dispensary, the likelihood of the people that you're delivering to is buying their cannabis through your dispensary. Is that correct?
Correct.
Does the delivery service need a different license or permit, or is he under the dispensary itself?
It operates under that dispensary license with the ability to have a transport delivery service under that recreation or under that retail license.
How does a customer who lives in Colorado calls XYZ dispensary, how do they wind up having that product delivered to their home?
Well, because this is so new to Colorado for 2020, I haven't seen it unrolled here. But let's say in California, for instance, you would call, someone would either have a dispensary that they're operating under that they say, okay, I can deliver from my retail point because I have a delivery license under this retail and I can bring the product to you. Or you may call a service that has product on site that they store and then will bring to you as well. So depending on, they may not have a retail place, they may have an inventory storage house that they may load the van and bring it to you.
It appears on the surface that the B2B model is going to be there forever. What's the possibility of the expansion of B2C in this business?
This is where we're seeing the trend. This will be the future of cannabis. A lot of states have kind of really slowly crawled into allowing this. And like I said, Colorado's been medical for over 15 years, regulated for 10, and we're just finally allowing this to happen in our state. And so this will be the trend in all the other states as we get more comfortable with it. We will see these delivery services.
And why do you think it has such great growth opportunity?
Well, places like LA alone, you've got more than 10 million people there. Traffic is a nightmare. Getting to and from these places is just crazy. And if you can nip that in the bud and, pardon the pun, and have people come and deliver things to you, it's just a smarter model. I think we're seeing now these delivery services are using drones, and we're seeing this new technology. You turn me on to this. And so this is kind of where the future is going. It's more sustainable. It's quicker, faster. It's to allowing the retail experience to be more automated, more online. Not everybody wants to get out of their house and go shop. And so it's just it's the future of where we're going. It's the Amazon of cannabis.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, Ellis. We've been joined today by Ellis Smith, who is from the American Cannabis Company, one of the founders. Thank you for joining us today, Ellis.
Thank you.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network.
Welcome to the conversation. This is Dan Perkins, and we've got a really interesting guest talking about something that I've been interested in for some time, and we finally found the right guest. Joining us today is Alex Carrion, who is the Strategic Solutions Manager for Lightspeed Technologies. He's going to help us understand the value and the importance of having a point-of-sale program. Welcome to the conversation. I'd like to spend a little bit of time, Alex, talking about you talking about Lightspeed and what they can do and how they can help our listeners become more productive.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Dan.
Alex, I think it's important to step back and explain to people what point-of-sale software is. Some people may have it, seen it in the airports, and some have built their own, and maybe it has been as productive, has not been as productive as it could be. So tell us about it.
At the core, right, since the first transaction was recorded, I guess that clay tablet was the first POS system. But that's really what you would imagine a point-of-sale system is. It's a way to record your transactions in a retail space. At its core, that's really what it is. But with all of that, that action comes a lot of information you can gather around that, which has made the whole industry or the point-of-sale software just really grow and expand beyond simply being there to record transactions between customers. But at the core, that's what a point-of-sale system is. So for some people, it could be an Excel sheet. For other people, it could be a cash register, like a Casio cash register. And for some more advanced retailers, it could be a fully full-fledged system like Lightspeed.
So it's a way to capture the transaction information, not only about the sale, but perhaps about the customer, as much as they're willing to give you. So let's talk about some of the aspects of point-of-sale software and how it can help people.
That's where you start to get distinguishments between different offerings and different partners in that space. Depending on what your needs are, there's likely the right system for you. You know, with the right system, you can get a really good sense of what's happening in your business. And maybe I can explain that a little bit as to what those important aspects are. Like I had mentioned previously on our conversation, I'm a big fan of the fundamentals, and I think that every system kind of touches on these a little bit, but the length at which you go is really the distinguishing factor. So leaving like point of sales systems aside for a second, when we start a business, we have a great idea, we have something that we want to offer the community, whether it's a product or a service, and that's generally our focus. But quickly, when you get into business, you start realizing that it goes beyond that, right? There's a whole periphery of things that you have to watch out. And where we like to distinguish them at Lightspeed is we call them the pillars of retail, right? So you have your inventory that you have to sell or the service you're selling. That's a given. But there are employees that you have that are selling those items or those services for you, and they're selling them to customers. So when you take a step back from those three pillars, you realize that you know who sold what to who. And with that information, you can start to really grow what would, you know, a point of sale would be. It's not just a means of recording a transaction. It's a ledger that you can go back to. It's a source of data that you can connect. It's even a central, or you know, it could lead to a centralized, you know, omni-channel platform in the future if you have those capacities. And we can touch on omni-channel, but frankly, I think that's really what the core of a point of sale system does. It helps you track those three things: what you're selling, who you're selling them to, and who's actually doing that selling. With that information, you're equipped to start really running your business and improving it.
If you think about it for a moment, in the past, trying to track sales was a very mechanical process and didn't really make it easy for you to figure out who the customer was, what they were buying, and how frequently they were buying. Is there a way that you can quantify for a customer how their business will change by using point-of-sale software?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we've looked at, like, what a what the industry typically is, or at least when we look at the industry, obviously we have to make certain assumptions, but at Lightspeed we can really look at like our customer base. And we see a trend, right? It's a pretty easy trend, because on day one of a new customer joining with us, and you know, 13 months later, we can take a look at what their path was, and what we've noticed is that it's in excess of 20% on average, the growth from just the first year. And we obviously come with this assumption that not everyone has a point of sale system before, that maybe people are coming from pen and paper or maybe a different system. But on average, people that just jump into a system that handles those fundamentals really well can actually see quantifiable growth near the 20%, which is something that personally I can attest to, as I've been a customer myself on the receiving end, wondering why I need a point of sale system, and then implementing it, and you know, maybe having a little bit of my hand forced a bit into operating in a way that is, well, eventually became best practice. Things that I maybe didn't know about at first. So it's logical that, you know, if you have a bit of guidance, that you know, it's not a magic system, right? Like we're not actually selling for you. We're not helping. No point of sale system is going out and making sales for you. But just making sure you have a good grasp on those fundamentals just naturally leads to you running a tighter ship. I've experienced it personally, and I've you know, secondhand experienced it as well.
We're speaking today in the conversation with Alex Carrion, who is the Strategic Solutions Manager for Lightspeed, on point-of-sale software. Let me give you an anecdotal situation of the use of point-of-sale software. I have a friend who has several dispensaries in California, and he put in a point-of-sale software package. And what was unique for him, he was able to capture the cell phone numbers of his buyers. And so he decided to test the idea, would buyers respond to special offers coming across their cell phones in an instant message. And the first one he tried, he was just blown away at the response rate. He got between 20 and 25% net converted response, meaning people who actually opened the email, the instant message, saw the coupon, and then went into the store to redeem the coupon to buy the product at a special price. And it's now a regular part of his marketing, expanding his relationship with his customers.
If you don't mind, this actually hits back to the first thing I mentioned. Something I do want to kind of reinforce is that when you jump to a digital system, what you just experienced there is something that, you know, 30 years ago could have been a possibility, although like you'd mentioned, very manually intensive, right? But, you know, I can run a list, gather a list of phone numbers and decide to shoot them a text. And when they come in, I manually apply a discount, train my staff. You know, there are ways to do that. But if you don't have a digital sort of system, or you're not digitalizing your information or centralizing it, then whenever you do want to take that next step, right, because it may not be in your immediate plans to have an engagement or loyalty platform, but it might one day come into your plans. And if you have to think back, oh my God, I have to do so much work now to make this, you know, to actually make this effective, or wait a minute, all the information is already here and I can just connect it. You're, you know, as a small business owner, these are the places where, you know what, centralizing and digitalizing things in a point of sale system are going to allow you to then develop that side of your business much more quickly and effectively than if we all just gather around and try to see, okay, how can we split these tasks and hopefully not make too many mistakes. The information thing, right?
Right.
That's very important, especially for first-time business owners or young, or you know, people really getting started off, and maybe 3 years ahead of time, they don't have a plan necessarily. They might have a 3-year plan, but you know, people aren't thinking, okay, what's my 5-year data infrastructure plan as I, you know, grow my business?
Right.
Like, that's our job. That's not your,
right.
You know, that's our job to do, and we want to help you guys do that as a point of sale system.
Alex, I want to raise one more issue in the remaining moments we have, and that is the confidentiality. You know, we have lots of stories about breaches of email lists and phone numbers and social security numbers and all those things. Do you have any pushback from customers who tell them that they're reluctant to give out a phone number or an email because of breaches of security? How do you make it secure for the people?
A consumer always has a concern, right? Whether it's, you know, divulging personal information, you know, credit card information. There's a plethora of things that since the beginning of time, there's always been a concern. You may not have a choice, right? Your state or provincial legislation might say you have to collect all this information. But mm-hmm. if ever a customer turned around and said, you know what, I've given you my information, and now I don't feel comfortable, can you expunge my info from the system? If your system can't do that, then it's problematic. But if your system can do it, well, then you can at least put those fears to rest. So as much as it's a commitment on our end to make sure your data is safe, but we also have to be able to do something with that data, like I said, anonymize it if need be. But it's definitely a big part of the conversation. I think that's why GDPR and CCPA over in California are going to be a big part of the coming decade and how we're going to handle these. But just make sure your partner is capable of doing that. Like, well, obviously we are, but we're certainly not the only ones that could that are GDPR or CCPA compliant, and you should be fine.
We've been speaking with Alex Carrion, who is the Strategic Solutions Manager for Lightspeed. So, Alex, how do people get a hold of you and find out about your products?
Yeah, the simplest way is just to go online, lightspeedhq.com, and either chat, give us a call, or shoot us an email. You could just go lightspeedhq.com, select your region, and start talking to someone right away.
Thanks for joining the conversation today. If you didn't hear all of this conversation with Alex Carrion today, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com and go to the archive section and listen to all of this show and previous shows. This is Dan Perkins.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
This is Dan Perkins, and thank you for joining the conversation. We hope you enjoyed the conversation today and invite you to join us next week. By the way, you can go to our website, www.americascannabisconversation.com. and download previous shows, but also on the website, you'll be able to see who our guests are going to be next week. So go to the website, americascannabisconversation.com, download shows, and look who's going to be on next week. This is Dan Perkins, and thanks for joining the conversation.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety, or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in next Saturday at 4:20 p.m. for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation.